I'm Gab. He's Jules. Bluish skies over West London. Yeah. Check. Kind of cloudy, but you know what? It's definitely stormy clouds over North London, and a lot of happy people in the blue half of Manchester. Manchester City destroying, wiping the floor, I think is the term. Arsenal 4-1. In what we said, maybe, you know, it's too wrong to call it a title decider. There could be twists and turns, but effectively, mentally, psychologically, this is a huge blow. Arsenal are still 2 points clear. City have two games in hand, and a big lead in the goal difference, which means 13, as of right now, if the lead doesn't change, City can just draw their two games in hand or win one and lose one, and they are champions.
Yeah, yeah, and there's more games to play, of course. Both of them have to play Brighton and Chelsea. Arsenal will have to go to Newcastle. City go to Fulham, for example, this weekend. So you just don't know. No, but like, you know, you don't know. But yeah, I think the title is won now for City. The demonstration of football, of what Arsenal would like to be one day and what they're aiming for, that kind of intensity, that kind of just tactical perfection, which really was it. And when we thought, for all those times where Pep Guardiola kind of overthought, kind of invented something, changed, no number six, no number nine, he came back to basic, really, with a back four, traditional back four. There's no John Stones in midfield. We're expecting the 3-2-4-1 formation that City have been playing and done so well with in the last few games. Instead, it was just a flat back four with then Gundogan and Rodri as a two, and then a front four with De Bruyne very close to Haaland. That was the key for me.
Yeah, and I can assure you, 1,000%, if Arsenal had won that game somehow, people would have come out and said, "Oh, look, Pep is overthinking. He's overthinking. He's what? Why did he play Gundogan? Why didn't he have Stones in midfield? Blah, blah, blah."
He won't.
Just the overthinking thing really bugs me, Jules. He does this to get an edge. It's not overthinking. Yeah. It's thinking. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't work. Here he made the right decision.
Yeah.
Everybody was expecting Erling Haaland, the big goal scorer, blah, blah, blah. And Kevin De Bruyne, the great assist man. I thought it was interesting how that was flipped. Obviously, Haaland had a ton of chances. Ramsdale stood up well to him. Yeah. Eventually, Haaland got his goal late. But I'm hoping people see different dimensions now to Erling Haaland's game. Because
He's improved on it. You remember the first leg against Bayern, the assist for Bernardo Silva, the cross. This is something that I think at the start of the season, Haaland takes the shot and doesn't cross the ball like that. And in the game against Arsenal, there's the two assists. I mean, the first one is not really an assist. It's on the middle of the pitch. He ends up as an assist, but De Bruyne has so much work to do after.
Right. But
the second one is much better.
I'm referring more to, obviously, we know that people have said a lot of things about him. People said, he's big and strong. He's not necessarily a back-to-goal guy. He did a really good back-to-goal job with Rob Holding and his hair hanging over the back of him, holding the ball up, playing it right into De Bruyne's path. Yeah. That is a skill.
It is a skill. It's a skill that I didn't have against Spurs away, where they played a lot the ball directly to him, and he didn't do the same job as he did on Wednesday night. So, but you could see how much he's improving his game overall. And that's just, 10 months in with Guardiola, 9 months in with Guardiola? Imagine in a year, 2 years' time.
All right, Sergio Arsenal, obviously, he played what I think most people would say is his strongest 11 on paper, in the sense that it's the people who've either played the most this season or would have played the most if they hadn't gotten injured. I was so disappointed in so many individual performances. Mm-hmm. Shaka, we knew, is coming off his mystery illness. Again, let me just say mystery illness is, the guy has the flu. Just tell us he's the flu, right? What when we say illness, people start thinking, ooh, is it something weird? Does he have dysentery?
People just think it's the flu.
Well, then just say it's a flu. It's a sign. It's, you know. But individually, I thought so many of these people got really just blown away. I go back to, and I think Holding, I don't think Holding was the worst defender on the Arsenal team, which I'm used to saying.
No, yeah.
I think that prize, Zinchenko, I thought completely disappeared.
Yeah.
From this game, contributed nothing. Gabriel played the way he's played in the last couple of games, which is not good.
Yeah.
Really not good.
Yeah. Too easy. It was a time for City.
I want to give Odegaard a pass because he's contributed so much and he's young and whatever, but had zero impact in this game. Yeah. I never thought Partey would be the most effective of the three midfielders, and he wasn't effective. And then up front, MIA, Martinelli, Saka,
and Gabriel Jesus, to the point that they look better after Trossard came on.
Yeah, but that was a time where City stopped playing, really. So when you don't have service, when the team you play against is so good, collectively especially, and your team collectively is struggling, which we could have expected, then individually, you can't, unless you're Messi or...
I don't understand why they're struggling, Jules.
But there's nobody in this Arsenal team that can win a game like this on his own, that can shine on his own. It's impossible. The whole game, Arsenal, is based on... It's a positional play. It's a positional style of football.
So shine collectively.
But you can't, figure out a way because the team against you is too good. It's too good for you.
I don't,
we said before, Gab, to win on Wednesday, Arsenal had to be perfect.
No, I don't need Arsenal to win. I expect Arsenal. Arsenal can lose. I would have expected Arsenal to have learned some lessons from the last couple of games, and I would have expected them to line up differently, to make different substitutions, to put up more of a fight than they did.
Arsenal just didn't turn up, right? Didn't turn up like the best version of themselves would have been.
Or even a mediocre version of themselves.
No, it's not about mediocre. It's just like they haven't been really good in the last few games anyway. They were not good on the night. To win that game, they would have had to be perfect in every way. So no individual mistake. Not like the other guards on the third goal, that poor pass in the middle of the park. No little mistakes like White on the
second
goal. Let me just finish. So no individual mistakes like that. Little or big ones, no. And they had already two of the four goals that they conceded. They would have needed City to not be at their best. So a bit like what we saw when they lost to Brentford, only lost at the Etihad this season, for example, where they played okay, not great, not really clicking. That didn't happen because City were the best. This is one of the best performances that City had this season overall. And three, just get a bit of luck, which they never got. And then on top of that, if individually your key players maybe don't turn up, Partey, and we know how that position in the Arteta system is so important. If Partey is below par, everybody suffers. If Xhaka is not up there for the pressing, everybody suffers. And Martinelli and Saka and Gabriel Jesus is pretty much the same one. And on top of all of that, against you, you've got this incredible machine where everybody played well. There's no one that didn't play well. You could say maybe Grealish, but Grealish didn't have to play well. What he did was enough. That was exactly what his manager would have wanted him to do. So, of course, I would have loved a 2-2 draw where Arsenal were almost as good as City, but it was just City were too good.
Yeah, I think on the day, there's no question City were too good. But sometimes more than one thing can be true. I can also call into question how Arsenal could and should have done more on this game.
Because too much
this
space for De Bruyne to start with.
This is really, really deflating. It's really deflating that it seemed to me by playing the same people, by trying to play the same way that he's done all year, including, except for the game when Zinchenko was out, including through this run, it showed to me like, all right, we're going to go, we're going to do our thing, and then come what may, we're going to execute better, and this is our best chance of getting something against City at the Etihad. What I would dispute is, if you look at City's recent run of games, I know obviously they've won a billion in a row and whatever, right? But we saw them fall apart badly against Leicester after he made the changes, admittedly, but that was still a team falling apart, maybe thinking they were cruising. We saw against Bayern for an hour in the first leg at the Etihad, you know, when they were outplayed by Bayern. And then they end up winning 3-0 because they had the individuals. That's fine, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But on the pitch, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, study what Bayern did. Study what Bayern did in the second leg. And you may have different players, and you're not Bayern. Although one thing you have in common, neither one of you has a center forward who can carry this team, whether it's Gabriel Jesus or... whoever Bayern Gnabry. Don't have up front, Gnabry, Gnabry whatever.
Yeah. Again,
so there are elements. And instead, he went and he did the same thing. And yeah, you know, I mean, we had a debate. We looked up the numbers, right? In the first half, the possession stats were 60-40 to City. Mm. So people make a big deal out of, oh, City's press and Arsenal couldn't get out. They couldn't get out. They struggled to get out. But equally, they also had 40% of the ball. Equally, if you're not going to be able to pass your way through the press, there are other things you can do. If you're stuck deep into your your area and the guys can't get out because Haaland and De Bruyne and Bernardo Silva, who I thought had an underrated game and was really, really strong in this game, you keep hearing about how fast Martinelli is. Why not just the odd ball into space? Why not do a better job contesting the second balls in midfield? And this is where you can say Partey was less, you know, let them down a little bit. But it's not just him, it's Xhaka too.
They were below par pretty much everywhere. I think they tried, especially with Saka a little bit. Martinelli moved around quite a lot, more than usual. We saw him on the right wing just early on when he gave the ball to Saka, who had a cross and nobody was in the box. But I just think
with the Saka cross, the one where Gabriel Jesus is in the left wing position. What was that?
But no, because Martinelli and Gabriel Jesus swapped places. So
right.
Martinelli was centre, then Martinelli moved to the right to make that run when Saka.
Martinelli making the run, does it not occur to you that maybe start moving into central?
He also moves very quickly, Gab. To be fair, I know you didn't like Gabriel Jesus' performance, and I agree with you. On that one, though, I give him a pass. But you're right. I thought what I struggle with is Kevin De Bruyne is in great form. You've seen it. You've had all that video analysis of City going into the game and what they've done recently. And there is clearly a lot of games where De Bruyne has played almost as a second forward next to Haaland, exactly like they did on Wednesday night. And you know that he's going to try to find all that space in between the lines and everything. And I just don't understand how there's not even like almost a man marking on De Bruyne in the game on Wednesday night. And in the end, they gave him far too much time on the ball, space and freedom to just literally, De Bruyne dictated the game. And yeah, his first goal is amazing. And if you look at the replay on the first goal, which I find incredible, he never even looks up. So he gets the ball from Haaland at the halfway line. He knows exactly where Gabriel is. He knows he's going to go onto the outside of his right foot to do that little turn kind of thing. And then he shoots without even looking at Ramsdale or the goal. Just the awareness of the guy is incredible.
Not just that, the ball also bends as well. It looks like, I don't know, just the way he hits
maybe it. Ramsdale can do a little bit better, I don't know. But it's just incredible. But don't give De Bruyne much space on the ball.
We're speaking, it's Monday morning quarterbacks, right? We're speaking hypotheticals. If you say, give De Bruyne less space on the ball, you either man-mark him or you put another midfielder on there. Because if you ask one of the center backs to just go tighter on him, then you leave the other one one-on-one with Haaland and you'll just get beaten that way, right?
I just think they expect his to be in midfield and Gundogan to play higher up with De Bruyne.
Okay, but once you see, that's a great point. Once you see that's not happening, that is when you, as a manager, need to make an adjustment.
Exactly. I think they never adapted to it. And you thought, okay, maybe I have time. 15 seconds in the second half, there's that first chance. And the ball for De Bruyne, who is a hard volley to hit, but it's still, that's 15 seconds in the second half.
I wonder if in this game, and maybe it's too defensive, maybe you would have even considered dropping one of your strikers for an extra midfielder. If that's what you were going to do, if you're so concerned about, you know, being able to play about City's press, you know, what would that have been? I know there's no El Nani who I think would have been ideally suited to this, because if you talk about man marking Kevin De Bruyne coming from deep, you do it with El Nani or Partey. You don't want to have shot chasing him around.
Or you
put in Georgie and you send Partey to do it, but then you lose something else. But
You need Martinelli and Saka. That's how Bayern caused them so much trouble. He is with Coman and Sané by playing on the wings very quickly. And I think the idea was to do that. And you saw that
counter and you have Odegaard trailing through the middle. I mean, you try something different. Instead, I feel like we got served up. I feel like what happened was, you know, in the first half, Haaland had all those chances. They weren't going in. And it comes to the end of the half, and Arteta's like 1-0 down. He's like, okay, tight game. This is the speech I'm going to deliver at halftime. This is how I'm going to change it around. And then you get that Stones goal.
Should not concede. I'm sorry, the defensive line has to be better. White, there's no reason for White to drop a bit deeper than the others.
You know what's funny about that goal? Like, it was a classic situation where, honestly, like, you can't tell if he's onside or offside. Because it's so tight. You really, really can't tell. And I'm so used to the semi-automatic offside. I watched this game on BT Sport. And obviously they don't have semi-automatic offside here, right? So they kind of just show the replay over and over again. They draw what looks like one line. Because remember, they're like, oh, we don't want to get too specific with the lines. And I'm like, what the hell does this mean? This means nothing.
And you don't even see when I was on French radio with Manu Petit commentating on the game. And he was like, We don't even know if the ball has left De Bruyne's foot or not on the on that image. You don't see where the ball is. So for all you, I mean, you suspect that they stopped and to put the line in the photo just as the ball was about to leave De Bruyne's foot. But still, you could not see it on the screen. So for all we know,
this
it was
is
just
so
like,
dumb. This is so stupid. This reminds me of the early days of VAR in this country when they had like the really sick line or they had the line that wasn't straight. Like what?
But we go again. You know this, but this is why City are so good because they don't make those mistakes just before the break, just after the break. You know where you're, where you should all be on the same line defensively on set piece, and you and one of you is slightly behind. Certainly when it matters, they don't. And De Bruyne said it after the game. He said, this is the mindset that we have when we go into those games at the end of the season. We know how much is at stake, and they just don't crumble. They don't make mistakes. They're just so good at that kind of stuff, which Arsenal is a young team. And Arteta is a young manager. Arteta is 41. Pep is 52. You know, this is Mikel Arteta's first job.
Nagelsmann's 34. Because, so what?
But that's what I mean.
Nagelsmann would have made a bunch of adjustments
mistakes,
in this game.
But he makes
it might have been worse.
Too. This is a learning process. Pep has gone the learning process already. Pep created the learning process.
I'd push back about that. I don't care how old Arteta is.
No, I disagree.
This is all new. Sorry. What I mean by I don't care, I'm not using it as an excuse. What I'm saying is Arteta, at this stage of his career, it's not like he's not making adjustments because he's too inexperienced, he hasn't thought of them. The guy is a football nerd. He worked with Pep. He's an intelligent guy. He knows the options. He knows the pros and cons. He chose not to make those adjustments because he thought that this was the best possible. This gave him... So let's stop with this young... This is not an experience thing. It's not like...
Of course
because
it
is. It's not like Roy Hodgson would have said, oh, look, I'm old. I can make
I could not disagree more with you.
In this case, in the adjustments he made in the game, he made them because he thought they were the best... They gave Arsenal the best possible chance to go and get a result.
But you would do that at 20, 40, 60, or 80 years old. It's not about... Of course, every manager...
Exactly.
Makes
it's got nothing to do with age. It's got nothing to do with age.
It does
nothing
with experience. Maybe next time, with that kind of experience, he said, like, you know what? This is not the right thing to do here. The right thing to do might have been to go to a back five, like you said. But let's not forget, Arsenal have decided to 12 defeats in a row in the league against City. Arteta, since he's been in as an Arsenal manager, has never beaten Pep and City. Never, ever. Not even came close last season at the Emirates. But this is new to him. And even more in a game that is a title decider.
I think we view this differently. I don't think experience comes into game management in this case. I think he has enough experience to know he just simply made... I don't even necessarily say he made the wrong calls, because it might have been even worse if he'd made those calls. He sees all the option. Experience wouldn't have given him more option this game.
I disagree.
But
I really disagree.
I want to mention something else about... When I said line up with Manuel Akanji at left back, I've seen Akanji play right back. And in the past, I'd never seen him play left back. Maybe I'm sure he has at some point. Mm-hmm. But I was just thinking, all this moaning and obsession that we in the game do, like, oh, look, he's a 6, he's an 8, he's a 10, he's a left back, he's a right back. In this system, Akanji playing left back works. And it's not like Akanji is some super Swiss Army knife of a player, right? He's just an intelligent guy who gets dropped in. He's effectively playing center back, if you want, in a left back position, but he still moves the ball around. Not that freaking difficult if you're a smart guy.
No,
why do we get so obsessed with these labels?
Yeah, no, you're right about the labels. I think it helps when your team is so dominant, which is true. Two things. One, he clearly had instructions from Guardiola, never go above the halfway line. So he never went forward, never attacked, nothing, which is fair enough. Secondly, as a right footer, defensively, against Bukayo Saka, who's not just left-footed, because we saw for him against Southampton that he goes on the outside to cross the ball for Martinelli. But very, very often, more often than not, 8 times out of 10, he will come inside onto his left foot, where Akanji is with his right foot. And we've seen, for example, in the past, even at City against Mo Salah and Liverpool, Pep playing a right-footed left player as a left-back position just to counter Salah coming inside onto his left foot. And I think, again, you could put Walker at right-back to match the pace of Martinelli. Not that he needed it much, because, again, Martinelli didn't do much. And you put Akanji at left-back because you know that Saka is going to come inside a lot onto his left foot, and Akanji is there with his right foot. And, again, that worked well. But you're right. It's I mean,
we overstate this stuff. It's football. It's a fluid thing. Unless you really are completely one-footed, which neither Akanji nor Saka is, it just requires a bit of intelligence, a bit of adjustment from the other players around you, that when you play the ball around the back, they don't give it to your weaker foot or whatever in that situation. But if you're a good pro, you can do that in a game like this. In a game where he needs to play as a winger, maybe not. And obviously he's not going to step in midfield. We were talking about this before. I'm a little bit surprised that we, especially with Akanji being there, because Akanji was effectively playing like a center back, we didn't see more of Stones stepping into midfield from, admittedly, a center back position.
Mm.
But I think ultimately we just didn't need to.
No, I think that was the plan.
Need to do it.
I think that was the plan. Even before, the game plan before the game was the 4-2-4 formation, no Stones in midfield, and the fact that you score after 7 minutes, you're not going to change your game plan after that. So I think Pep thought there's no need for the box in midfield with Stones, Rodri, Gundogan, and De Bruyne. Instead, I'll have Rodri and Gundogan, and then De Bruyne playing much higher up on the pitch. And again, tactically, they were perfect. And yeah, it was helped by the fact that Arsenal underperformed, but they underperformed because City was just one of those days where they were unplayable.
All right. I want to go back to Gabriel Jesus. Sorry. You know my thoughts here, but I do wonder, in a game like this, and we were talking about how you could have approached this differently, when you know that you have Gundogan there and you know De Bruyne is playing higher up the pitch, obviously a lot of the flow in the game is going to go through Rodri and Gundogan.
Mm.
And obviously, Jesus' job, because he runs around a lot and he's got a lot of stamina, is going to be to disrupt that. Equally, though, what I saw was Jesus, he's got a triangle, effectively, of people who can pass the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, leaving Ruben Dias to one side, who's not on their level, right? But he's like pinballing between Stones, Rodri, and Gundogan. You've got three people who can kind of send the game vertical with quality at any time. How's that supposed to work? How can he make it happen on his own?
Yeah, I mean, usually Arsenal press in the 4-4-2 formation. So Odegaard is very often at the same level like Gabriel Jesus going to press. The problem is that I think they never really worked out Gundogan's position, De Bruyne's position, and the option now with Haaland to be able to play long. And of course, the first goal, Stones hoofs the ball, let's be honest here. Like Manu Petit on radio last night was saying, like, Stones knows exactly what he's doing. He doesn't. I'm sorry. I disagreed with him on Wednesday night. Stones kicks the ball out. And then in the center, because he knows that Haaland will be there. And then Haaland does an amazing job. The first touch with the laces is fantastic. And then just lays it off. And De Bruyne does like magic stuff. But when you have all of that, it's not just traditional pressing, I think, for Arsenal. And even the counter press didn't work either, to be fair. It's just perfectly played from a, you know, from a city point of view. But you're right, it was not easy for Gabriel Jesus to play. One on Haaland, because he takes the burn off, right?
I know, this is the single most important thing about Haaland. He couldn't score while he had the bun, so he took it off. Now he's free.
Help me out here. He takes the burn because he thinks the game is over, right? Because usually he does it when the game is actually over. He's never done it this season in game.
Oh, no, come on. I like to play the whole Viking sort of hammer of the gods thing.
I think he's waiting.
By the hammer of the gods, Odin's beard, let me take this off. How is it possible I haven't scored yet? It's a stupid headband. I need to get a new one. He takes it off and then he scores. I choose to believe
he
that.
He knows the ref is going to blow the final whistle. He takes it off, saying, this is it, this is over. And then suddenly the ball, by the way, Foden's first touch is just out of this world. And then you think, oh, hang on, I'm here. And scores. This is the only goal celebration that he's done this season with the hair like this. It's amazing. Well done.
Final points on Haaland. 49 goals for him.
In 42 games.
In 42, is it? I think it's up to 43, because he didn't score at the weekend, did he? However many.
Yeah.
It's a lot and a little.
Yeah,
it's more than a goal a game.
43.
And
33 in the league now.
Which... Oh yeah, because apparently it's the record, which is a thing, it's a new. Did he equal or beat the record for a 38 game season?
Beat it for 38.
There you go.
Still one behind for 42.
That's all of it. Anyway, 49 goals in a season so far, no big deal. Clive Allen did it some years ago, and we both know Clive. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. All right, enough City. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gabby.
Liverpool went away to West Ham United and remained on track for some kind of European football next year, which is good.
Of course it is.
Jules, your pal David Moyes is fuming, but Jurgen Klopp is beaming.
Yeah, David Moyes thought he should have had a penalty.
Who's right, who's wrong here?
Neither, I think. I mean, the penalty for Moyes, I'm in the camp. I'm not. Again, it's one of those, if you are, like, depending on where you are on the floor, you could think it's harsh. I mean, the fact that it was not even reviewed by
VAR. That was a penalty. It should have been reviewed. It was not reviewed. Pretty open and shut. Like, it's not that difficult.
But we've seen that incident before.
Did Liverpool play well?
No.
That's what it means. Why is he so happy?
The club is beaming because they won. I mean, it's not often that they win a few games in a row. So you take it. Paqueta scored a wonderful goal that in the end is pointless. And Klopp and Liverpool got away with one. Won. Great. But in terms of the game, I mean,
they were due. I think when you look at the disallowed goal, which was really close, probably correct decision, but that still tells you that you're screwing things up when you do that. The other one where Antonio at the far post, where Van Dijk
Van Dijk, even on the Bowen's goal, what is he doing?
That was terrible. That was terrible.
Even to be
but nice to see Cody Gakpo scoring. I never really paid attention to him. He looks like a really nice guy. He looks like kind of slightly dorky, sweet. Like not.
So Thiago Alcantara coming on. How does this work? Help me out. If now Trent seems to have this new position, like really, really into midfield now.
Mm-hmm. So there's a Zinchenko role.
Yeah, but even more, I think, attacking. Right. And can him and Thiago, could that work together?
Can I say this again? Thiago Alcantara is a part-time player who plays in part-time
situations.
He's
on the bench now until now in the end of the season.
He's not.
He comes on late.
You don't worry about him.
Okay, fair enough. A goal from Fede Di Marco gives Inter a 1-0 win over Juventus in the Coppa Italia semi-final second leg. They will now face the winner of Fiorentina against Cremonese, which kicks off in a few hours. And Fiorentina are 2-0 up from the first leg. Well done to Inter. Are you going to praise Simone Inzaghi or blame and hammer Max Allegri for...
Like, Inter deserved to go through over the two legs.
They were terrible, I thought.
They were much a better team. But we got to talk about Max. Since April Fool's Day, I've worked it out. 1 win, 2 draws, 4 defeats. The only win coming against Sporting Lisbon in the Sporting Clube do Portugal in the Europa League. And it's just terrible football. And he tried to do something different today, and he played Chiesa up front with Di Maria behind. It's a 3-5-1-1, but then it's not working. So then you send on Milik. When you send on Milik, you take off Kostic. He's the only guy who's actually crossing the ball.
Yeah.
So you drop. I mean, Bremer is terrible in this. Yeah. Did you see? They got disallowed, but Edin Dzeko does a little move, beats Bremer with quickness. Edin Dzeko should be beating nothing with quickness, except maybe for a tree or a pile of bricks.
Yeah,
like
all his parents.
It's not good.
And Pogba coming on. I mean, I felt
he got 12 minutes. Whatever, easing back into it. I'll say this:
I felt for him.
Like, I know you've got bigger fish to fry, bigger things to worry about, but you just can't keep playing this badly and stop bringing up results. This is not going to work. Yeah. I think it's time for a reset button.
I agree.
Le Parisien reports that Lionel Messi wants a raise to stay at Paris Saint Germain. Jules, are you buying this?
Surely not. I mean, Jorge Messi, so Leo's dad, is calling it the World Cup winning close, in the sense that now that his son is a World Cup winner, It needs to be paid more because you need to recognize the achievement of being a World Cup winner now and to have a World Cup winner.
I think he's been recognized enough. It's not Paris Saint-Germain's
job. I mean, he's a good before. I mean, like, come on. Like, what? He's 40 million a year. 40 million euros a year.
I'm going to make this very simple. I don't know if the story's true. This story puts Messi in a bad light.
So I was told it's not true. And I was told that PSG anyway are offering a pay cut.
If I were Paris Saint-Germain, this is exactly the story I'd want to have out there.
Yeah.
So that in case there's any deluded weirdos, most probably not in Paris among the match-going fans, but probably in the Paris Saint-Germain diaspora, the people who discovered the club the minute Messi signed, blaming them. You've got an excuse.
Yeah.
More Messi. Reports in Barcelona say that Frank Kessié and Andreas Christensen have refused a sort of pay cuts that would enable the club to take back Messi.
Yeah, so that was my question to you. Are they being selfish? That was my question to you, but it's okay. You can read it again, and we both answer. Right. I don't think they're being selfish. Why would they take a pay cut to get Messi into your squad? Unless their dream of playing with Messi one day, and this is the realization of their dream. Why would you do that?
This is so stupid. Shame on people who put this out.
Yeah.
First of all, Kessié and Christensen do not need to take a pay cut because they were signed a year ago when Barcelona, they knew about the levers.
Yeah.
They knew about their situation. They went through all of Bartomeu's books. Whatever they paid them because they said, we know what we can afford them. Not because Messi might come back one day, we have to pay him. This is turning really
ugly.
This
is as bad as this rumor that Barca are going to put a clause in the new player's contract, like Inigo Martinez, for example, say that there's a clause that you might not be registered. Why would you even join a club where that club tells you before, okay, we signed you, here's your contract, but just so you know, you might never play this season.
Again, we don't know if these are true, but the fact that these reports are out there and trying to paint Kessié and Christensen in a bad light,
that's just
shame for whoever's doing that. It's now 5 defeats in 5 games for Frank Lampard Jr. Chelsea lose 2-0 to Brentford. Jules, they were booed again at home.
It was terrible. I mean, I had another screen. I just could not believe how bad they were, how bad Lampard's choices were again.
He played the formation that did well against Real Madrid.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know where you go next. You will have to play Arsenal, obviously, next week on Tuesday, your next league game. You've got City coming up at some point. Well, you keep him and you keep losing. Frank Lampard, as a Premier League manager, has won one of his last 18 games. And I think there's 2 draws. So it must be like 1 win, 2 draws, 15 defeats in the Premier League.
If the objective was to look at players and get them settled and stuff like that, I don't understand also why Mudrik on the bench, why Aubameyang on the pitch. I never want to see this guy ever again.
But why is he playing? Why'd you bring him on?
You need a centre forward. I don't know.
Oh, my God. Sticking with Chelsea, Gabby, according to numerous reports, including on the ESPN website, Mauricio Pochettino is favourite to take over at the club. Is this your understanding, and do you think it's a good idea, it's a good choice?
Some people are saying it's done. It's not my understanding. My understanding is that this is a Pochettino thing that comes from the Pochettino camp, but he is in the running. But with Topoli, I don't know, because I don't know what decisions go through this guy's head. I don't think it would be a good choice. My concern here, for two reasons. One is, you've got, not because he's a bad manager, although, to be honest, I was very disappointed from his time at Paris Saint-Germain.
Yeah, me too, trust me.
And I remember also how it ended before that at Tottenham in the last year when the team was terrible and doing nothing and disinterested. So I'd really want to get under the skin of, like, hey, Poch, what happened then? If you get the Pochettino before that, then you have a tremendous manager. If you get that guy, I don't know. Secondly, though, if you've decided to go technical director, Vivel, Stewart, blah, 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 you're going in a certain direction. You're saying these guys are going to make the personnel decisions of the team. With Pochettino, it's always been an issue. Him versus the director of football, the sporting director. He knows more. I know this guy. My friend told me this dude, blah, 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 blah. You have to decide what club you're going to be. Are you going to be a manager-led club, or are you going to be... That would be my second reason to concern.
Is there a really big manager in a big club that is not like Pochettino? I don't think so. They all
you need a, you need a manager who puts his trust in the director of football and the process, even if afterwards he advocates for his own things and they listen to him. That hasn't always been the case with Pochettino. He was sniping, as you know, at Paris Saint-Germain's
but Leonardo
continuously. I don't need that in my club. I don't need more internal sniping. You decide, hey, Vivelle, Stewart, it's been fun. You're 6 months. Mudrik, Malagusto, bye-bye. And then I get an execution-only director of football, technical director, and I let the manager choose the players, which is fine, too. But you have to have a sense of direction. Then my third reason is the Rafa Benitez reason. Mauricio Pochettino is very much identified with Tottenham. He's very much identified with Tottenham at a certain stage. Remember the Battle of the Bridge and stuff like that.
Yeah,
of course. Away the title. Does this mean anything to you? Or are you boldly creating another potential issue for yourself?
Don't you think that it's more of an issue for Spurs fans to see their old, really good manager?
No, it's more of an issue for Chelsea fans because they think they're a bigger club than Spurs.
But I think Chelsea fans would recognize that he is a good manager, a very good manager. That is the right fit, I think, for this young squad coming up.
When was he last good as a manager?
When was what?
When was he last good? The second to last season at Tottenham, yeah?
I mean, he lasted only... You can't compare the last 5 months of his time at Spurs and the 4 years before that and what he did in those 4 years. And PSG was... The dressing room was the dressing room. He was never able to manage it. This Chelsea dressing room is not like the PSG dressing room that he encountered.
No, you said you have to manage 40 different players. But I don't know. Like I said, I am a Pochettino. I think if you get good Pochettino...
I just don't know that
I can trust the process here and these people involved, that they know how to make the
right choice. I don't think the problem with Pochettino, for me, is he's a really good fit in there.
Tati Castellanos becomes the first foreign player born outside Spain to score 4 goals against Real Madrid. Yeah, this is a thing.
Incredible.
In a Liga game. Girona beats them 4-2. Joe, should this be a concern for Carletto? And how remarkable is this Castellanos tale? For those who don't know, he was at New York City FC.
He was, yeah.
Before that, I think he was at Torque.
Torque,
so he's a City football group guy.
He is, but he's only 24, and it's a remarkable story of an Argentine who had to go to Chile to start his career, then via Uruguay, then in MLS, where he won the title with New York FC and finished top scorer, by the way, had an incredible season in 21. And then Girona, who is also owned by the City Group and Manchester City and New York City FC and et cetera, et cetera. And now he scored 11 goals in La Liga, where he's doing well. He's going to go to a better club because he's better than Girona. Maybe not good enough yet for City.
What club in City Football Group is better than Girona?
No, but he's going to go outside of the group, I think.
Oh, okay.
But I think that's better for him. He's a wonderful, if you haven't seen him play, really, really wonderful player. Great 4 goals. I think for Real Madrid, they have let the La Liga go a long time ago.
I think you like Tati Castellanos a lot more than I do.
No, I do love Tati Castellanos, for sure. Sticking with Ancelotti, the Brazilian FA, Gab, the president, Hernaldo Rodriguez, says that the plan is to have a new head coach for Brazil in place by May 25th. Ahead of the Seleção's next set of games. And he said, like, well, we're going to wait for Carlo then and see what he says.
This is great. This suits Ancelotti because you want some clarity from Real Madrid about whether you're going to keep you or not. Are you going to make you wait until to see how the Champions League final goal, make a decision then? But I'm really bored with the story. Florentino is sitting there saying, you know what? I don't need to decide. Dude, you got a contract.
You don't think Florentino has decided already?
I don't think so, no. I don't think it's an immutable decision, put it that way. I genuinely don't believe that. Barcelona lose 2-1 to Rayo Vallecano, but at least Robert Lewandowski gets back on the score sheet. None of this matters, right? None of it?
Not really. They're going to be champions regardless. It's never good to lose, and they were 2-0 down, and Lewandowski, before scoring, had missed a few chances, by the way, one especially in that first half. So still not great in Robert's world. Tottenham Hotspur play Manchester United in a few hours, Gab, on Thursday night, but I want to ask you about the players' decisions, that the Spurs players, decision to refund the tickets of the travelling Spurs fans who saw them lose 6-1 at the weekend. What do you make of this?
I think it's great. I know people are all sitting and go, oh, whoa, they're all so rich, it doesn't mean anything. Or other people, oh, whoa, well, if they lose to United, are they going to refund the money? They refunded the money for the same reason that players sometimes apologize for their performances, not for their results, right? Mm-hmm. They clearly feel guilty about the way they played, and they blame themselves. I worked out how much it's going to cost them. I think their ticket allocation was just about right around 3,000. Max price, £30. It's going to end up costing them, I don't know, and if the whole squad does it, just the ones who played, whatever, but he works out between $5,000 and $6,000 a player. That's not nothing. It's obviously a lot lesser Harry Kane for but Pap Sarr, it is a lot. It's a big chunk of his salary. Fine, it's a gesture, right? I got.
Did they pay for the petrol to go up to Manchester? To
no, they didn't. No, the train, no, 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 they
the
didn't.
Flights,
no, no,
no, the food at the petrol station on the way.
No,
no, okay.
It's a gesture, right? Okay. You prefer this relative to empty?
No, 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 no. I like it. I like it.
More Spurs. Ryan Mason says he's ready to take charge on a permanent basis
okay.
if things go well.
Is that at Spurs?
Yes, I don't
know. Is he ready for Spurs?
Maybe it's at Girona. I don't.
I like Ryan Mason a lot. I really do. He's from Enfield, so right by where Spurs are training, play, etc. What you want? I don't know. Like we saw him when he was the interim coach before. I don't think he was, Pep in the making.
Wait, but he coached them in a League Cup final.
Yeah, true, exactly. Maybe he's ready now. We will see. We will see what happens in those games coming up. I just don't think that's where the club is at right now. Sorry. Sorry, Ryan. Sorry, man. The endless Manchester United sales story continues, Gab. There's a new deadline for bids. This is Friday. And Sir Jim Ratcliffe is reportedly ready to let the Glazers keep 20% of the club.
Yeah, that's going to go down well. So the deadline is 10 p.m. Friday, but it doesn't matter because none of this matters. They'll sell if they want to sell if they reach a price. I don't see how keeping the Glazers around with 20% of the club, but they don't get to make a decision. I don't think it's going to endear him to the fans. I don't see what the benefit is to the Glazers, frankly. So
they will make more money when they sell.
Exactly.
Shares.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Atletico Madrid celebrate 120 years of history and beat Mallorca 3-1, by the way. That Carrasco goal at the end, where he puts the goalkeeper on his backside. Oh, that was delicious. Rajkovic, I think it was. Jules, Diego Simeone has cracked it with this lineup.
That was really a good performance. I have to say, Antoine Griezmann shining again, 2 assists now for him. His numbers are very impressive for the season. The shirt, did you like the shirt?
No, I thought it was hideous. I don't want it.
What do you mean? No, this is hideous. This is like in tribute of.
I understand why they did it. Like, I don't ever need to see the stupid shirt.
Oh, no way. I'm all, you know me, I'm a shirt guy, obviously.
Real Madrid wear red and white the way God intended, okay? There's a reason.
Not 120 years ago.
That's fine. So do it in this game. You didn't ask me, were they right to wear the throwback shirt for the game? Sure.
I thought that was a
Knock
great idea.
Knock yourself out, bring it all the old guys out, whatever.
But it was a great idea, and you played well.
The shirt is hideous, and I don't ever want to see
it
again.
I love the shirt. It was great. And you, to be fair, you made that first team 120 years ago proud with your performance, and now you're right behind Real Madrid again.
Do you know what's funny? 120 years, and they were debating this on Liga TV last night. Is Diego Simeone the greatest manager in the history of Atletico Madrid? I hate to say it. Yeah, he is.
Yeah, I think he is too. I would have to agree. Alejandro Garnacho will reportedly miss the FA Cup final in order to play for Argentina in the Under-20 World Cup, which obviously start at the same time as that final. Gab, are you okay with this?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think it's more important to a young player. Now, interestingly, United taking a different tack here than Real Madrid.
Yeah.
Who have not authorized Alvaro to go. We can debate who's more important. Is Garnacho more important? These are kids. These are squad players, essentially, right? Yeah. Garnacho might have played a bit more, but, you know, United still have Antony and Sancho and Alanga.
And
Alanga, who everybody's forgotten about.
Yeah,
right? It's funny, though, because I think it starts on the 20th of May and goes until the 11th of June, which is the day after. If I'm Real Madrid, okay, maybe you keep him around if you beat Man City and you go to the... But the fact that you can't work something out says, oh, yeah, no, he stays with us unless
Yeah, what happens if they don't qualify for
the final? If they don't qualify for the final, I don't see why you have to keep them around. I mean, well,
to make the numbers of training. I think it's such a at that age, it's such a great opportunity and experience to go with the mates of your age group, often that you've played with since you were 15, all the way to go and try to win a trophy like that. I don't know. I don't understand. I really don't understand why Real Madrid are doing this.
Aston Villa, meanwhile, keep winning. They're in fifth place after downing Fulham 1-0. Jules, a chance to praise Unai Emery some more, because I think not enough people have made the point that, oh, look, he's actually good, and we were too harsh on him.
They were 17th when he arrived, level on point with the 18th, on goal, I think just outside of the bottom three on the goal difference. Look at the job that he's doing. What don't you like about it? Ollie Watkins scoring, I mean, not so much anymore. Like, but before that, had an incredible run of matches where he scored in the Premier League. They play well individually. They're better. Jacob Ramsey, Buendia, Watkins again. This is great.
The centre backs, I think, also as well.
Yeah, Dibu in goal too. This is, you know.
Dibu, I can take or leave. I'm kind of tired of that guy already. But he's a good manager. He's a good manager. I think the fact that some people have now turned it into, oh, look, it's Unai Emery. He's a good manager. See how wrong you were to criticize him for when he was at Arsenal. Criticize the way he talks. Criticize the things he says. I go back to this. I don't like listening to him. Not in English, not in Spanish. He doesn't make any sense when he speaks to the media. I've said this before, right? He should just never talk. He should just go and coach, and he's very good at that.
Yeah, exactly. Alexander Seferin says that everybody in football favors the salary cap, Gab. So at some point, it will happen. You in or you out the salary cap?
Everybody in football, except for two important components of football. Yeah, one, agents. Yeah, and two, players. Yeah, hey, look, hey. He's right structurally.
Of course.
Everybody agrees on it, because one of the problems afflicting the game is that their teams will spend way too much money, right? And so
In wages,
and they can't keep up and so on. Whether it's a salary cap or there's something linked to revenue, you need to sort this out. But it goes back to the same thing. It's enforcement. There's a lack of trust. I don't trust, or not I, but many people don't trust that Manchester City and Paris Saint-Germain, for example, to name two of the most egregious, but you could name a bunch of others, that they followed the rules that were there. So we can have a salary cap, right? But then if I'm paying you off the books by my, you know, special account in the Cayman Islands or whatever, and I'm sending somebody with a van full of cash to your house, you know, do you have the tools to enforce this, and do you have the willingness to enforce it? That is the single biggest thing. Otherwise, in principle, sure, everybody agrees. Yeah. Sustainability, why not?
Yeah.
Cristiano Ronaldo has won two Kings Cups in Spain, Copa del Reyes, as I like to call them. But he won't be winning the Saudi Kings Cup this year. Al Nassr are knocked out by Al Wehda in the semifinal, and they'll play Al Hilal in the final. I'll tell you what, Cristiano, not happy.
Not happy at all. I mean, great goal by the French striker, Bogiel, I think his name is. Amazing, like, kind of overhead kick slash volley, if you want.
Wait, do you not know this Bogiel fella? Is he not Paris born and bred?
Yeah, I think he is, because he played for clubs around Paris, I think. Amazing story, and he played against Cristiano, of course. And he said,
I don't think he likes Cristiano very much.
He said no, because he tried to ask for his shirt, and Cristiano was really rude and not polite at all.
Why are you asking for Cristiano's shirt after Cristiano's lost a game and been knocked out?
Because you might never play against him ever again, so this is your one chance to get his shirt.
You both live in Saudi Arabia.
You knock at his door and say, hey, remember me? I knock you out of there. Do you have maybe a spare shirt somewhere in the, you know, in your wardrobe? I mean, Cristiano shouted at his bench at halftime, really, really cross. Missed a couple of chances, hit the bar as well. So didn't play himself, could have scored, should have scored, had the chances to score. So not delivering himself. Clearly the team around him not good enough either. It's another disappointment.
What happened to all those stories about the manager getting sacked?
Well, yeah, he's gone.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Rudy Garcia, yeah.
Who's in charge now?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who they appointed.
It's funny how all of a sudden they want us to know a lot, and now it's time. Okay.
Yeah. This was back on Monday night, but Roma lost away to Atalanta 3-1. Gab, they're going fourth. They're not fourth on 56 points, with Inter 2 points behind them and Juve 3 ahead of them. Is Jose Mourinho's best bet for the Champions League next year is winning the Europa League?
They're joint fourth, Jules. That's what it should have read. But I think that's what our producer meant when he wrote these questions for us. When you think about it, when you look who's best in the competition, who's left in the competition, I think that might be an easier route into Europe. than qualifying by the league. Because remember, they're joint fourth with Milan. Inter behind them, 2 points behind. I think Inter are a better team right now, and they're playing better football than Roma. And Juve could... Now, we don't know if he's going to take Juve's points away again. That could change the dynamic. But,
It's Roma-Milan at the weekend, no? And Lazio-Inter, no?
Yeah, head-to-heads.
Wow, crazy.
German media made a big deal Uli Hoeneß going to visit Thomas Tuchel at the training ground. What do you think he told them, Jules?
TT, just, you know, where are you going away on holidays? What are your plans for the summer? What should we... I don't know. Was they... a courtesy visit of saying, like, I mean, let's remind everybody that Uli Hoeneß right now is just, he's nothing at the club, right? Apart from a former legend as a player, as a director / CEO / whatever.
It's like he secretly owns the club, but he's nothing, haven't told anybody. He has no official role.
No. And yet he turns up, it's this big deal. Obviously, everybody knows about it. The cameras are there, everything. Do they talk about next season? Maybe transfers, maybe...
Is it a dreaded vote of confidence?
Yeah,
is this like Herbert Heiner saying, like, oh, yeah, Julian Nagelsmann, he will be with us for a very long time on Monday, and then he gets sacked today.
Or is it something, is it a threat? Say, like, hey, I'm coming here, but I tell you what, this is the last time we lose a game. Or, like, what's going on?
Also, you know, we've seen Tuchel up close. I don't... Tuchel is not a touchy-feely guy,
he's not a cuddly guy.
Uli Hoeneß is a cuddly guy.
Yeah.
So, like, I just think the dynamic between the two...
I would have loved to be, like, fly on the wall in that room, to be fair. Napoli could win the title this weekend. We mentioned that on Monday's show, of course. But, Gab, we still don't know exactly when. What's the story then?
Yeah, so Inter play Lazio and Napoli play Salernitana. Obviously, if Napoli beat Salernitana and Lazio don't beat Inter, then Napoli will be champions. According to the schedule, Napoli are supposed to play at 3 o'clock on Saturday. Inter are playing Lazio at 12:30 local time on Sunday. Problem is, they're worried that basically Napoli fans will, you know, they'll watch Salernitana win on Saturday, and then they're going to watch the Inter-Lazio game on Sunday. And if they win, they're going to all run out into the streets and blah, blah, blah. So they're saying, no, let's have these at the same time so that they'll be at the stadium.
And you celebrate there if you win. No?
They've already disrupted everything. It's taking so freaking long to make this decision. It's just disrupted Napoli's women's team. It's disrupted Napoli's basketball team. I don't understand why you can't make a decision one way or the other.
Yeah.
They haven't even told the broadcasters about, you know, are supposed to sell the games. One solution is, we'll play Napoli Salernitana on Saturday, and then we'll open up the stadium. And we'll have a big screen. People can watch the Inter-Lazio game there at the stadium. And we'll make it free for everybody. How's that going to work? They haven't worked that out.
Anyway,
worked any of this stuff out.
60,000 in the Diego Maradona, right?
Right.
You will have twice, if not three times, four times more people in the street, even if the game...
Of course.
Even if people at the stadium. So, in the end, you'll have people maybe in the stadium, but also everywhere in the city.
It's so stupid. So stupid. Sheffield United have been promoted to the Premier League, Jules. Yeah.
Well done. They beat West Brom on Thursday night. Is enough now. Luton, who are third, can't catch them, and neither can the teams that are below as well, who will qualify for the playoffs. So we've got now Burnley, sure to be champions, and well done to them for that championship. And then Sheffield United back in the Premier League. They went down in 2021, of course.
So, I don't follow the championship at all. Is it the same guys who I saw there last time around?
As in, like... What, Chris Wilder, you mean?
Well, Basham, yeah.
No.
I know Wilder's gone, but it's like there's like Basham Bauer and Egan and those guys. And
So, I mean, they still have like...
And Billy Sharp?
Billy Sharp is still there.
All right.
Still going with his number 10 and the armband when he plays as the captain. They had a really good run in the cup as well. Remember the semi-finals? So it's a really good season for them. And Paul... Heckenbottom, that's it.
Former Leeds manager.
Yeah, of course. Doing really, really well there. So well done to them. Let's see what they can do next season in the Premier League. And sticking with the mighty Blades, Gabby, should we worry, though, about the club's current ownership?
Yes, we should.
So you love the stories, don't you?
This is just embarrassing. This is embarrassing. These people in... So basically, they're owned by this guy named Prince Abdullah, who is Saudi.
Yeah.
Even though he's supposedly a prince, Because I'm assuming Prince refers to his title, and it's not like...
Like Prince the singer. He's as much as a prince than Prince the singer.
And he's a cousin, but one of many cousins of MBS.
Yeah.
So this guy owns a club. Not an issue with him owning a club, because I guess he's not related to the Saudi government, even though he's part of the royal family. I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever. He decides he wants to sell the club because he's lost a lot of money, even though they're on their way back to the Premier League. Mm-hmm. So he makes a deal with this guy named Dozie Mabusi, who is a Nigerian guy. They reportedly agree on £150 million in November. And then, you know, there's a period where he's got to pass the director's test and whatever. And so then all of a sudden, again, reportedly, I'm basing what I read in the Times, the Prince Abdullah's like, oh, Dozie, we need money. I have to pay a tax bill. I have to buy some players. I need to do this. So this guy says, okay, here's some money for this. Here's more money, like a down payment, right?
All right, yeah.
He gave him $8 million, reportedly, because otherwise they would have slipped into administration. When you go into administration, that's a really bad thing. It's almost like, you know, for those in the U.S., it's like Chapter 11. So money, Prince Abdullah guy clearly can't run his club worth garbage if you're going into administration with a team that was in the Premiership 2 years ago and is on its way back in, right? So that's the first thing to say. This guy should have not have been allowed to own a club if he's going to run it like that.
Mm.
Secondly, this guy's Ndozi Mabusi, he hasn't passed the owners and directors test yet. He hasn't failed it,
yeah,
but he hasn't passed it. And I don't understand what they're doing.
So what's going on?
Why is it so? Why can't you give this guy an answer? Thirdly, supposedly, Prince Abdullah, now the period of exclusivity's passed, Prince Abdullah doesn't want to sell him the club anymore. Do you know why he doesn't want to sell him the club? Because if you sell a Premier League club, it's going to be worth a lot more.
Exactly.
This is a messy, ugly situation. And this, honestly, this speaks to the seamy underworld of bad actors, bad people, lack of transparency, lack of oversight that often exists when people buy and sell football clubs.
Crazy.
Back to that Sheffield interview, he also said that nobody really understands the handball rule, and it's not him saying it. It's UEFA's Players Advisory Board, who includes a whole bunch of ex-players.
You like Patrick Vieira, isn't it, in Zidane on it?
Yeah, you get a bunch of big names, say, hey, what don't you like about football? Oh, yeah, this handball. they've asked IFAB to clarify it. You know what? I understand it.
Do you? Tell me. What, the handball?
Yeah.
It seems there are different interpretations, though, in different countries.
And there are different interpretations in different countries, yeah. Because, you know what? There's different interpretations for what is a foul in different countries.
They shouldn't be with handball, though.
Why?
Because there should be one rule. Either you just stick it to, if you don't make your body bigger, if you make your body bigger, regardless of where you are in the world, mm-hmm. this is a handball.
Yes, I understand that.
Right?
Okay. Why don't these people understand it?
I
understand you could do a better job of explaining and so on. Yeah, I get that. But I'm just tired of all these people going, oh, nobody understands it. What's not?
Or just maybe clarify it by saying, like, this is what's going to happen. If the ball doesn't change direction, but just, like, hardly just brushes your arm, this is not a penalty, for example. This is the one that recently, and I've told you on the show, really bugged me against Leipzig, for example, for Manchester City. It's a pen that should never have been a pen because nobody appeals for it. The ball doesn't change direction. It hardly slows down because it just, I think it was Benjamin Henrich. Just like, don't give that one. So maybe it's just to say, okay, let's just clarify it. This, like, three bullet points. If in this case it's a pen, in this case it's a pen, and in this case it's a pen. Every other case is, it's not a pen.
I don't know. I think the one against Leipzig was a mistake, and it was a poor interpretation of the rules. Just because people are going to interpret the rules or the directions incorrectly doesn't mean that the rule's not clear, because these are still humans and they'll still make mistakes. It doesn't mean every time you have to go, oh, nobody understands it.
Yeah, no, okay.
It's only a kick. A jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Some good news for Jose Mourinho, Gabby. Remember when he lost his temper with the fourth official when his Roma side lost to Cremonese? Well, he's been vindicated.
He has. He basically said that this guy, that this guy, the fourth official, this guy named Marco Serra, had said something extremely rude and unconscionable to him, and that's why he lost his rag, because obviously normally such a calm and measured person. apparently what Marco Serra said to him, and for this he's going to be published, he says, like basically Mourinho was complaining about something and fourth official turns to him and says, why don't you just go home? The whole stadium is making fun of you.
Go home as in Portugal or go home in Roma in the flat?
No, just shut up. Just go home. Take what he right. means, like, take the defeat, shut up. You know, everybody's making fun of you.
I mean, Jose.
Let me put it this way. If a journalist had said somebody in the other team had said it, I don't think that's rude. When you're a referee, it's like law enforcement. Would you, if a cop were to speak to you that way, would you accept it?
They do. You know, they do all the time.
Bad cops too.
Bad cops.
Yeah, I don't think that's right. If a cop talks to me that way, I'm going to, like, you know, I'm going to say, take off the badge and the gun. We'll see what's up.
But you think Mourinho always talks nicely to the fourth referee?
No, I'm sure he does. Look, I'm sure he does. I understand the frustration on his part. But you, when you represent the authority, in the same way a policeman can't talk to you that way, or shouldn't talk to you that way, a referee can't talk to somebody in that way, or shouldn't. Or at least read the room. There's some guys you can do it with. Clear with Mourinho, you can't. Also, this was in front of the cameras as well. So, Mark Sheffrin. He says the Champions League final could be in the U.S. one day, though not before 2026. I feel like I've heard this a thousand times. You good with that?
No! No, please! Just don't. Please! Would you have the Super Bowl in Paris? No, you wouldn't. Would you have the Super Bowl in Berlin? No, you wouldn't. Why would you play the Champions League final in L.A.? Doesn't make any sense. It's the Champions League. It's the European competition for Europe. For European clubs. This is not on. I'm sorry. This is not. We've said it before. I can't remember when he said something that's stupid. This really, really annoys me.
I suspect he's saying this because he wants sponsors to come forward and make him an offer and then he can leverage. I don't think he has any intention of doing it. But somehow trying to leverage it to get a better deal over here when cities offer to host Champions League final. I suspect that's why he's doing it. But to answer your question, you get a sense here. You talked about a Super Bowl in Paris versus a Champions League final in L.A. Are there more association football fans in L.A. than there are NFL fans in Paris?
But that's not the you would feel the Stade de France. There would be 80,000.
You can feel everything. It, but it's the same thing. When I hear about how big the NFL here, and I'm cognizant of the fact that I am wearing some branded NFL gear right now, I think about it, but it's like one in 50 people, and there's a lot of passionate fans, and they'll still fill the stadium when the NFL games are over here and whatever, and that's great. But I kind of feel like a Champions League final in L.A. would be a bigger deal than a Super Bowl in Paris. And there's more people who watch the Champions League in L.A. than there are to watch the NFL in Paris.
Yeah, but that's still irrelevant. Like, I don't...
Okay, so you're just doing it on the principle that it should be in Europe.
It's not even that. There would be still people watching the Super Bowl if it was in Paris, in the stadium, outside the stadium, on television. But what would happen?
Association football belongs to LA more than American football belongs. I may be devil's advocate here, but more than American football belongs to Paris, culturally, socially,
on. There might be more soccer fans in LA than there are American football fans in Paris.
How many professional American football teams are there in Paris?
No.
I'll help you. Zero. How many association football teams are there in LA?
Yeah, no, there would be. I mean, there's two clubs to start with in MLS.
There's three as well, if you count the Angel City as well.
Yeah, well, three with the women league, of course.
So three, LA three, that's Paris not, zero, take the L.
I'm not taking the L, and it's not going to happen anyway, but it would be crazy. I could not wait to see the reaction in the US if the Super Bowl was announced to be in Paris in 2026. Barcelona, I've completed 1.45 billion euros financing deal to renovate the Camp Nou. So
450 million.
Yeah.
It's stadium, it takes a lot of money. When we start a financing deal, let's be very clear on this, right? It means they're borrowing more money. They're adding more debt. This won't count against financial fair play, and they're going to justify this. But it's still cash that they need to pay back.
Yeah, that they don't have, right?
Right. So that is one thing. But, I mean, I think they're going to pay this back over 30 years. They're going to pay this in installments, and most of the money they're going to have to pay back later. Depending who you read, they make it seem like, this is the smartest move in the world. And we've conned those morons at Goldman and JP Morgan. They don't know what they're doing. So that's all fuzzy. I'm more interested just on the football side, because this means that they're going to close the Camp Nou for next year.
Yeah, play in Montjuic.
They're going to play in Montjuic, which is fine. Montjuic holds 55,000. So next year, when you need the revenue, also because of all the levers you pulled, you're going to be getting, what, about half the revenue you got when you were at the Camp Nou?
Yeah.
And the year after that, 24-25, they can move back to the Camp Nou, but it's not going to be finished. So capacity will be limited to, it looks around about 50,000.
At the same time, Real Madrid will play in a brand new full Bernabeu, which hasn't been the case now in the last, 18 months or so.
So,
but do you think...
So for 2 years, you're going to take substantially less revenue and have interest payments. And look, it might be a smart business decision long term. But short term, which is when you need to, when you already have the shortfall because of your levers.
Do you think they're trying to catch up with Real Madrid and how they renovated their stadium? Because they could have waited 2 years, like you said, or 3 years, to see when all the accounts are a bit better now, when the financial situation is a bit better. And then you go into, it looks like now they have to reduce the wage bill. They can't register players. They try to bring Messi back. And now on top of all of that, because maybe they see Real Madrid having that brand new stadium finished, they're thinking, oh, we can't be left behind. We have to do the same thing. They go after this renovation of the Camp Nou, which cost a fortune. And it's more than just the stadium, because they're going to do like a whole... It's the whole project. But really, do they need to do that now? Do they need to announce it now and fund it now?
I genuinely don't understand why they need to do it now, especially also interest rates are really high right now. So... Again, I'm not an expert in this field. It seems like odd that you would go ahead and do this now. But you know what? It's a democracy. Clubs voted. Yeah. The members voted on it. Members approved it. Laporta executes. Laporta does what the members want. Because he's a man of the people. Ryan Reynolds is on a roll.
Yeah.
Now he wants to lure Gareth Bale out of retirement to play for Wrexham in League 2 next season, Jules.
Yeah, that was amazing. And you know what? Even if it doesn't happen, and if Gareth Bale doesn't want to come out of retirement and he's happy playing golf and enjoying his family and his life now, just the buzz created over this. So
we've done our job. We've created the needless publicity for this.
No, I'm needless.
The man's a Cardiff fan,
about Wrexham,
isn't he?
It doesn't matter. Yeah, Rob McElhenney saying, hey, Gareth, should we go and play golf? But I will spend the 4 hours trying to convince you to come out and play for Wrexham one season. Right. It would be amazing. I'm saying for Gareth Bale and Wales and Wrexham, it would just be amazing. It's not going to happen, I think, but it would be amazing. That's all. Fortuna Düsseldorf in the German second division are adopting a new business model, Gab.
Yeah, so the idea is kind of football for all. And
for free.
And for free. the idea is that they're going to start a pilot program to see how it works out, where they're going to give away free tickets to the game rather than selling them, and they're going to partner with different sponsors to be able to make this economically viable. They draw about 30,000 in the second division, and their stadium holds about 55. So you can kind of be glib about this, and we're better off having 50,000. It's like the old...
Even if 20 don't pay, yeah.
Exactly, because then you get concessions and parking and whatever. It's an interesting business model. Again, it sounds like a little bit of a publicity stunt, and how they're doing it in stages. But I like the idea that a club like Fortuna Düsseldorf can do this, and that they can say, you know, we have a role in the community, right? If we don't sell tickets, if we just give them away, we're going to have less revenue, which means we have worse players. But guess what? More people are going to get to see our team. And that's what matters to us. Sure. Because you know what? We don't have all this Muppet show on the internet around the world, or all these fans who just watch our teams on TV or just watch the highlights and sit on the message boards and on social like every week.
It costs you more, though, as a club, to host a game with 55,000 than with 30,000 in terms of, you know, everything. Stewarding, policing,
but
even in...
Presumably you do your sums and you make it back. Maybe you charge more for burgers or sauerkraut or whatever they eat in Düsseldorf. I don't know. Curryverse. No, that's more of a Hamburg thing. Right, Jules, that brings us to an end, but we got to come back on Monday.
Yes.
Because we could have a new Serie A champion then. Napoli. How about that? Until then, love the game. Love your neighbor. Love yourself.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.